Itchy Gay Men. Guys, we made it to episode 10.
Yay. Mazel tov!
Well, congratulations, guys.
Thank you. Thank you. So as a special edition for our 10th episode, we decided that we were going to do a film that, while not necessarily gay in content, is gay in, very, very gay in cultural context. So, of course, we landed on our dear friend Barbra Streisand.
And it's gay in the 19th century definition.
Absolutely.
Of gay.
Absolutely. As well. And it's... from the director of that romantic comedy, The Prince of Tides, The Mirror Has Two Faces, 1996, Barbra Streisand. I am your co-host, Bill Antoniou.
I am Michael Soulard.
I'm Daniel Krolik.
And we are very excited to have, as our guest, our very first token female BGM, a National Post columnist and radio producer for the CBC, Miss Allison Broverman.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Allison, you're looking very pretty today.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We love having token female pretty guests.
It's important that I hear that all the time, or I might end up with Barbra Streisand's low self-esteem.
So, right.
The least realistic low self-esteem I've ever seen on film, but we'll get to that later.
For sure. We'll get to the fact that it's a movie about a woman who was raised in an abusive family. But anyway.
oh, God.
But first, let's let's get to our plot synopsis from Michael. Go ahead.
What do I really need to after that beautiful intro?
Yes.
Two people.
Anyway.
I feel more connected with my Jewish heritage after listening to that clip than I have in years. I'm ready for a birthright trip.
Well, that's really funny. Allison, you look very pretty today.
Thank you.
Very pretty, Allison.
I think we all look very pretty today. I think all of us can... agree that we all
not that we're condescending to our token female guests.
All right, so very short, very vague synopsis. As usual, I don't know what was going on halfway through the movie, but Rose and Gregory, played by Barbra Streisand and Jeff Bridges. Our professors
originally offered to Harrison Ford.
Oh,
oh really? Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, see, I'm so excited for your tidbit. That's my favorite part of the podcast.
I'm glad that it ended up the way it did.
Yeah, he was really charming. Okay, anyway, back to the synopsis. Anyway, Rose and Gregory are professors at Columbia University, where they met happenstance through a 1990s dating ad service, and upon stumbling, in quotations, upon one of Rose's classes for literally 1 minute until he stumbles out. He decides to meet with her. They get excited about chemistry, and when the chemistry is there, they decide to put into practice what he thinks is Rose's theory on love, marriage, and sex, assumingly that sex ruins everything. And in an unusual proposal, the two get married. Will it work out? Let's find out.
So the film was originally released in the fall of 1996. It was one of the big movies of the year because I don't need to really describe Barbra Streisand's career to our listeners, I assume. But of course, she's famous as a singer, famous as an actress, but has also directed three films, and this was the third of them, and it was her first film as director since The Prince of Tides 5 years earlier.
The first was Yentl.
And the first was Yentl in 1983.
I still remember the Mad Magazine parody that came out at the time. It was called Mental.
The movie where she sings 14 songs that all sound
all
the same.
All in her head.
All in her head. There's never been another musical where it's only one person who sings all of the songs.
And it's awesome because she went through the trouble of casting Mandy Patinkin opposite her and doesn't
still
let
sings
him sing
all the songs. So, of course, this was an anticipated release when it came out, and she was apparently expecting to get nominated up the wazoo for it, because she when it didn't receive a Best Director nomination for her, she claimed how those misogynist bastards didn't nominate me again.
For this or for Prince of Tides?
For this. Now, for The Prince of Tides, she had a leg to stand on, because it was nominated for Best Picture.
It was nominated for everything.
Yeah,
like,
and not for Best Director, and I could feel, I could understand, and Yentl also, she won a Golden Globe for Best Director for that, and it wasn't nominated in any of the major categories except for Best Supporting Actress for Amy Irving. Whilst this film, I don't know, it's like, did you see it? So it ended up with only two Oscar nominations for Best Original Song, which
and what
she
a song.
Was nominated for, and what a song, and Best Supporting Actress for Lauren Bacall, getting her very first career Oscar nomination.
Which is sort of amazing.
Yeah, and she's great.
And absurd, actually. But...
And everyone expected her to win,
yeah.
And then in the biggest upset of the night, Juliette Binoche ended up being Best Supporting Actress, because she really, really deserved it, even though Lauren Bacall is lovely. And actually...
And terrifying.
Yeah, terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And totally accurate as a damaging Jewish mother. Like, totally unquote.
Leave the baggage at the door, Daniel.
Or a Greek mother. She did win the Golden Globe. And then Barbra Streisand wasn't even nominated for Best Director for a Golden Globe. And they love her. They nominated... Mm-hmm. She actually holds the record for the most amount of Golden Globe wins. So that should have been telling.
She's not directing herself in Gypsy, if and when she ever does Gypsy. Is she
directing
herself?
Well, she's been
talking
about it for like 30 years. Yeah. So, and I don't want to be ageist, but she's 70 years old. And she's going to cast herself in a movie where she's the mother of a 5-year-old at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then teenagers. Mm. She looks great. I love you, Barbra. But really, get a grip. But Lauren Bacall also won the San Diego Film Critics and Screen Actors Guild Awards for Best Supporting Actress. I actually didn't find many crazy tidbits about this movie when I was looking it up, other than things like the picture of her parents when they're young. That's actually Barbara's real father.
Superimposed onto Lauren Bacall.
And also, while she was editing this movie, she went to a dinner party and met James Brolin.
Oh.
And really did finally.
She finally found someone.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Also, I want to point out, for anyone who listens to Julie Klausner, there's a play on in New York called Buyer and Seller by Jonathan Tolan, starring Michael Urie, which is about a guy who works in the shopping mall that Barbra Streisand has under her house. Because you guys know that she has a shopping mall in one of her houses?
No.
Yeah.
She revealed this on Oprah.
Yeah.
That's where she keeps all her knickknacks and all her chachkas.
No, it's not an active shop. She's just, all the things she's collected over the years, art or costumes or whatever, she has them, she built a fake shopping mall in her house. And Jonathan Tolan's wrote a play about someone who works there.
I love that.
Yeah, so catch it if you're in New York.
And Michael Urie, of course, was the Vanessa Williams' assistant from Ugly Betty.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that's
the
right.
Bitchy assistant. Okay. He's lovely.
So for this film, which she fired her cinematographer halfway through because she's apparently difficult to work with, she fired Dudley Moore also after they started filming and replaced him with George Segal.
Okay. Dudley Moore was going to be the quippy best friend.
It would have been one of his last roles, I guess, because he died not long after that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. She probably
Why did she fire
him?
I'm
just saying.
The great Hollywood cover-up.
There were a lot of people replaced during this this film shoot.
She probably hated him.
But she has quite an amazing cast. She's got, like, Lauren Bacall, obviously, mm-hmm. Jeff Bridges. She's got Mimi Rogers,
who's my favorite
in the movie.
The first Mrs. Yeah. Tom Cruise.
That's right. Yeah. She's got Pierce Brosnan, Brenda Vaccaro.
Oh, I love Brenda Vaccaro.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love her too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely famous if you watched movies in the 70s.
My only point of reference, really, for Brenda Vaccaro was she was the villainous sidekick in Supergirl.
And
Faye Dunaway were the
well.
Villains.
She was Phil's wife on the
Yeah.
And then, she was in Midnight Cowboy. She was nominated for an Oscar for Farewell, My for Once Is Not Enough in 1975.
She also sounds like Harvey Fierstein.
Yes,
totally.
Sure.
Oh, you think every Jew sounds like Harvey Fierstein?
Shut up.
She's got Austin Pendleton, who is the guy that she's always canceling on, who's actually like a well-respected New York director who makes a good
and
amount
who
of money
created
loser
and who
bit parts
and who
in.
Who was Model Comes Oil in Fiddler on the Roof.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. And then she's got Elle McPherson in a totally throwaway role that she didn't need to cast someone famous in.
Yeah.
And then if you notice in her class, Eli Roth is one of her students.
I thought I saw Fred Armiston at the beginning.
Me
but I wasn't
too.
Sure.
It's not him. Because I thought it was
But
him.
Also Ben Weber, who played Skipper on Sex and the City, one of Miranda's first boyfriends.
Oh, yeah.
He's also one of
so then are
his
they,
students.
Do they end up being like the four in the class, but then the four at the opera or the Philharmonic thing?
The wolves?
Like,
yeah.
Like,
maybe.
Oh, you're on a date.
Yeah. Maybe.
Okay.
Anyway, some critical reaction to the film from people who loved it. It's a terrific, thought-provoking, at times heart-wrenching twist on the typical rom-com, proving again Streisand's singular gifts.
Who wrote that? Barbra Streisand's mother?
Bruce Bennett.
Oh, okay.
Steve Crumb says, Downer Story does match its book source for the most part. Great cast. I don't know. Is it based on a book? I know that it's based on an old
French
film.
Yeah.
Which is actually about a woman who has plastic surgery.
Mm-hmm.
starring Michelle Morgan, who is like the most beautiful woman who ever lived. But anyway. So let's look to our dear departed Roger Ebert, who liked this movie because I get the impression from his review that he was just in a good mood that day. Because he writes, "It's rare to find such verbal characters in a movie, and listening to them talk is one of the pleasures of The Mirror Has Two Faces. There is a wonderful scene in which Rose and her mother discuss beauty." This is actually apt. There is a lot of wonderful conversations in this movie. And I guess, at, 1996, you're entering into the annoying blockbuster Jerry Bruckheimer era. And I guess if those are the movies you're watching, I would appreciate that about it, too.
Sure.
but some quibbles, he writes. Where is Streisand's family from? Streisand speaks with her usual New York accent. McCall sounds mid-Atlantic, and Mimi Rogers sounds WASP as the sister, it's which so is true. Very true. It's Mimi so Rogers true. Would never be her sister in a million years. Mm-hmm. On balance, though, this is a moving and challenging movie, fascinated by the murky depths that separate what people want from what they say they want and what they think they should want. He is giving it a lot more credit than it necessarily deserves. So, all right. We open the movie with a nice shout out to the gay male audience, which is the students in Jeff Bridges' class being like, he's too boring to be gay. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, he also dresses like he shops at Eddie Bauer and nowhere else. But anyway, she is a very good director of actors. That is something I will say, despite the fact that this movie is bloated and bad. But like, an actor has been nominated from every film she's ever directed, which
that makes
is
sense. Yeah.
Telling, yeah.
And often doing career best work, like Nick Nolte.
Yes, yep. And Kate Nelligan in that as well, and Amy Irving.
I would don't not laugh when you say Amy Jeff Irving. Jeff Bridges' career maker film.
No, I wouldn't say that either. I love that
in some circles.
I love that the movie opens like with her eating. Are they called snowballs?
Yeah.
Like she eats junk food and she watches sports, so that's why she's not married.
It's the greatest star reveal ever because like you don't see her until like 5 or 10 minutes into the movie where like she reaches through her underwear drawer to get the snowballs.
And you know what I find really disturbing is that when the shot opens to her and she's watching the baseball and whatnot, she's got the glasses on. I'm like, oh my god, that's totally how early 20s, if not late teens, girls are dressing today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hipster.
Yeah. But I also
we're gonna have a lot to say about Barbara's clothes through this movie.
She has the most beautiful body, but they just put her in baggy sweaters until her makeover.
Yeah, well, they gotta hammer that point home that she's like the ugly duckling.
I also played a fun game while I watched this movie. I pretended that it was a prequel to The Big Lebowski.
Thank you, because one of my notes is like, why is Jeff Bridges the Big Lebowski in this movie? But he calms down after a while, kind of thing.
You know what I was also going to ask?
Everything about The Big Lebowski.
What is everyone's history with this movie? Because I saw it in the theater when it first came out, and then I got it on Laserdisc, and I watched it 30 times.
Wow. I didn't see it until recently, but Paul Rudnick, the great author, used to have an alter ego column in Premiere magazine,
Libby Gelman-Waxner.
He wrote a piece as Libby Gelman-Waxner, where after Libby sees the mirror has two faces, she goes out, runs through the streets of New York, and berates everybody that she sees for not telling Barbara that she looked pretty today. And everybody that she told ultimately just broke down in tears because they were like, I'm so sorry, Barbara, you're beautiful. But then I saw it. The first time I saw it, I was snowed in a hotel room in Chicago because...
I can't believe you never saw it in the theater.
Yeah. No, this was maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, and I was snowed into Chicago, and I watched the final half hour, and I was like, guys, come on. And then when Bill asked me to do the podcast, I was like, we have to do The Mirror Has Two Faces.
That's
so
right. I watched it for the first time last night.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, okay. And, you know, it's a bit weird because it does seem like a movie that I would have gone to see with my mother.
Yeah.
We definitely went to see the first Wives Club around at the same time together and loved it.
Well.
And,
middle-aged women were big in 1996.
And the Birdcage.
Also 96,
So I definitely saw a lot of movies like this in the 90s with my mom, but for some reason I think this one was even too much for her.
And you would have had to have like awkward heart-to-hearts with your mother after seeing this with her.
I would have. My mother always told me I was pretty. I didn't discover a photo of myself at 2 years old and said, oh, I used to be pretty at the age of two. We'll get to that.
I also really love that part because she says you were pretty, and you want her to. You're waiting for her to be like, and you still are, but she doesn't let that shoe drop.
No,
it's like you're still a bitch.
I know. She's like, what is pretty anyway?
Had you seen it before?
I had never seen it before. I heard about it obviously because I was alive in the 90s, but that's about it. The only sort of emotional connection I can think about is every time I hear Barbara Streisand sing, it reminds me of my parents' divorce. That's basically it.
Is there a specific song? Or
the divorce song was the whole Guilty album with Andy Gibb or whatever his name is. Yeah, that's
Barry. Was it Barry Gibb?
Barry Gibb, yeah. Every time I hear that, I cringe.
So that's funny, because I actually didn't even love the movie, but for some reason, like, I used to collect a lot of movies even more than I do now back then, and I remember buying it, and I just found it an easy watch, and I used to watch it over and over and over again. And then I was watching it again yesterday for this, for the first time in, like, 15 years, and I was like, this is really bad. I don't understand how I was able to sit through it. It was an ordeal.
It's shot in beautiful soft focus.
The whole movie, it is easy to look at. No wonder she fired her cinematographer. Every single shot has a golden glow somewhere above someone's head.
It's
and
soothing.
He was probably not getting that right for her.
Yeah, it's a good movie to leave on in the background just because it has a nice soothing glow on your television.
Well, one of the questions I was going to have, but you answered it in your tidbits, was that this is such a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I miss winter so much. Like, the snow's glistening.
Yeah, and it came out in November, yeah. I love that he's basically a sex addict who needs to see a therapist, and it's never properly addressed that he has a serious mental problem. Also, he's not the first professor who, like, had girls on the brain. Like, I love that they're treating it like he's a rare anomaly.
It's like, but the movie treats it as if he's the first man to think about sex.
No, ever. And, like, he has a real, he's a modelizer with a serious psychological problem, and I don't understand why she finds him attractive, and I don't understand why anyone, everyone's talking about how ugly she is all the time. She's, I know that she's not a supermodel, but, like, she's adorable.
She's adorable.
She's totally adorable, she's so adorable. Charming, and her laugh is so easy, and she's so, like, there's no way that he attends her lecture and he doesn't fall in love with her right away, given that
and
she's so charming with her students.
And even before the makeover, she seems to be a woman who's pretty comfortable with herself and her own skin.
That's the other thing, too.
So,
she's only apologetic when she's in a situation that, like, she decides to throw that in.
Yeah. It's completely disingenuous, actually, the prospect that Barbra Streisand is so unattractive that she will never win a man, and she likes sports, and that's, like, what a crazy character quirk. She likes baseball.
Mm-hmm. I feel like Barbra Streisand in real life is the kind of person who doesn't want to hear from other people what she's willing to say to herself.
Of course not.
I don't know if that makes any
who
sense.
Is?
Yeah.
But, like, given how, you know, she's never being photographed from the right and all that stuff, it's just like, I can make a movie in which I call myself unpretty, but everyone has to put in all this effort to make me look cute the whole time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, like, if I said that, if I addressed the issue with her, she probably wouldn't want to hear
and it's
it.
Not like they did,
she
like,
have
a...
have you killed, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or have you banished to the underground mall.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe that. Yeah. Or killed, stuffed, and then placed in the underground mall.
Yes.
Has anyone seen Dudley Moore? Where is he? Where is he buried?
He's still atoning for Mickey and Maude, my favorite bigamist comedy.
I also love when Jeff Bridges, like, we're setting up the fact that he's so sex-obsessed that he can't escape it on TV because he watches, like, a Calvin Klein commercial, which is so funny because in the age of internet porn, I wonder how much crazier he would be.
Yeah. And then what channels are he surfing? He's watching insect porn, which is a really...
Which as a scientist, he can't deal with insects having sex.
Apparently not, no.
And
he's
making weird noises the whole time. It's like,
I know.
Oh!
Mm-hmm. That's funny, because when I was watching the movie, Pierre actually came out, and that was the scene of two ladybugs, like, doing their mating thing. He's like, oh, cute. And I was like, we're breaking up.
And then the phone sex scene is hilarious.
Oh, I love her.
She's great, but before we get to that scene, the phone sex ad is amazing, because all these women look like vampires.
I thought it looked like.
What company is it? It's
all
the women.
And the one, Felicia, the last one, she had like Taylor Dane lips.
Yeah.
That was so huge.
I thought there was a big drag queen in the 90s in New York called Lipsinka. And I totally thought it was her.
But I love that, like, the phone sex operator is doing Cat's Cradle.
Yeah.
And
by herself.
But she's also, like, the worst phone sex operator. That's not, like, her voice sounds so. I don't know. It wouldn't get me hard.
She sounds pretty bored.
Yeah,
which
suppose.
Is fine. She'd
what does
bored.
Get you hard, Bill Antonio?
That's a different podcast.
That scene was very clever, though, and I also just have a note, Cat's Cradle! Exclamation point.
Yes,
I think
I
enjoyed playing Cat's Cradle in
I
the
90s. I haven't played
that
since, like, grade 4.
It's very nostalgic.
But I didn't
know
you can play. You can't really play it by yourself, can you?
Well, like, she can. Yeah, you can play it by yourself.
Sure, but
that's so funny, because I went through all my childhood learning Cat's Cradle, and I was like, I wish I could never do it. Now you can.
Now you can. Worst bridesmaid's dress ever when we cut to her sister's wedding.
Yeah.
But I don't understand, like, just because your sister's forcing you to be in your wedding, why does she make you dress like a teenager?
Like, when you're, like, clearly 45.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But also the entrance of my favorite character in the movie, which is Mimi Rogers. I remember when this movie came out, my sister actually saw it in the theater before I did, and she came back and she's like, Mimi Rogers is so funny. Like, that was the one thing that she came back with, is that she loved her. Because the scene later when she talks about him waking her up during her lesbian orgy fantasy was what made my sister laugh the most, and it's what she could remember most about the movie.
Mm-hmm. Who also may be a sex addict, Mimi Rogers.
She seems like it.
Yeah.
She should have gotten together with Jeff Bridges.
But it's so funny. Yeah. She's so funny. Like, when someone comes up to her at the wedding, he's like, Alex is looking for you. She's like, oh my God, it's starting already.
Yeah. Why are you getting married? Mm-hmm. There seems to be no reason that she needs to. These people all seem to be quite wealthy.
They're trying to,
independently.
Because she's trying to compare, she's basically making her a typical Jap is what she is, like, okay, to use an offensive term. And that she's like, I'm the like dowdy sister, and she's like the Jewish princess. Yeah. Except she's not really, because
she's very down to earth. She's like,
she's not self-involved. Yeah. No. She knows
what's up.
Yeah. Like, to me, if you were gonna make her that, you would have made her obnoxious. And she's not obnoxious. She's actually funny, and I want to hang out with her.
Yeah.
And also, doesn't look like she would ever be Barbara Streisand's sister or Lauren Bacall's daughter, for that matter.
What I found about this movie is that there's way too much emphasis on setup. You know, like the whole wedding, and it was all very uncomfortable and whatnot. But then at the end of the reception, it actually did kind of look like separate orgies happening. Like, Mimi Rogers is in a bathroom with a guy.
Yeah.
Pierce Brosnan is like with two women. One's massaging him. It's so weird.
So bacchanal. It's like,
we get it. Yeah. The thing like making Barbara Streisand look frumpy time and time.
Yeah.
And
although the wedding was set up by Lauren Bacall's big star entrance looking stunning,
like a drag queen.
Yeah.
But
and
yes,
even
yeah.
and
yeah.
even though and
yeah.
even
looking stunning.
Yeah. And even though Lauren Bacall is like, where's she from? Brooklyn? She's a Jew. She's from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
When she said, "Don't get into Degunsa Magila," it was like the most waspiest possible line reading.
I know. And I remember thinking that too. I'm like, despite the fact that she actually is Jewish, like,
yeah,
she doesn't pull it off, which is weird.
It's so strange. This was the '90s were big for Jews because there was The Nanny, there was Seinfeld, there was Mad About You. I never realized this until now. Like, the '90s was a good time to be Jewish in New York.
Yeah.
For once.
Not like that.
But I love that she has this entrance, like, it's very fabulous, and she has these great witty lines like, "All celibates sweat, dear, or else they'd explode." And like, her entrance is like her fanning around in the giant cape.
It's pretty
or whatever.
Amazing. She looks like a Disney villain.
But I also
she really does.
But I do love that exchange where she's like, "And getting married on the Sabbath. Oh, mother, the only thing you ever taught me about the Sabbath is that Bergdorf's wouldn't be open."
Yeah. And then when Mimi Rogers says, "Watch it, I'll get your birth certificate blown up as a Christmas card."
Yeah. That was her Oscar clip, actually, the night that she was nominated. Yeah. And I remember after the night, they had an Oscar expert being interviewed, which I have to get that job because it's basically getting paid.
Oh, you do
bullshit.
So well at it.
But I love these, like, "Did you guys notice Lauren Bacall had tears in her eyes?" And I'm like, no, she didn't. She's just old. She wasn't crying.
She's like, "It's so dry in here."
I actually read the part of her autobiography when she talked about that night, and she's like, "It was a bit surprising because that month leading up to it, everyone's like, you're going to win, and like, you're just expecting." So it's a bit jarring, but like, she wasn't devastated. Like, she, whatever. Mm-hmm. She was a movie star in the 40s. She got it. She was over it.
Yeah.
All right. And then we have one of the first exchanges of Barbara being down on herself, where she's like, "He looks like Gumby, whatever." And she says, "Whatever, I'm no great prize." It's like, but you're so funny.
Yeah.
And,
well, that's just a constant theme throughout the whole movie.
Mm-hmm. But given that her movie career was born with Funny Girl, which is also about a girl who's constantly insecure about her looks, but in that one, it's very genuine and also really quite charming. And also, she's with a guy
it's charming because
who loves her and like never thinks about the fact that nobody else.
It's also charming in Funny Girl because she's 23.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So
and also,
he also partly thinks
that aspect of her is hilarious as well. She's in her 50s because she turned 50 when she
with
the Prince of Thrones.
She's in her mid-50s, I guess.
No, she looks great.
Did
you guys know?
So what do you under, like, a lens full of Vaseline? You would look great, too.
That's true. Also, why does she... But she's a successful Columbia professor.
Yeah.
Why is she living with her mother? Her evil, terrible mother,
because
who
they
was
have,
only mean to her.
If this family is independently wealthy.
Because
yeah,
they have a
huge
apartment that probably has fantastic rent control.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem believing that part. Oh, you're right, but I'm willing to find reasons for that.
Can we
work.
Talk about how she treats her literature classes like a Paula Poundstone stand-up routine yet?
I know, but I have those. I've had those professors. That was totally acceptable. I've had those professors, and they're wonderful.
And that's also movie academia.
And university classes really that big, and she actually knows everyone's
all
names.
300 students
by
name.
I was doing that bullshit.
I had a university professor in first year who we had a class at least that size, she did actually learn everyone's name, and she had three sections of it.
That's a
crazy gift.
The only reason why
rare,
a prof would know
happens.
Someone's name in a survey course that was that large is if they had them before.
Did your university professor, like Barbara, wear a turtleneck covered by a judge's robe, covered by suspenders which weren't strapped onto anything?
Yeah. The efforts to set up the juxtaposition between how lovable she is and how dry he is as a professor is probably why they do it that way, but it is a bit.
But
funny.
The suspenders didn't go anywhere. They just sort of stopped halfway down her torso. It was the 90s.
Fashion,
she knows Trevor's name, and he's such a mo. I don't know if you remember Trevor in her chorus, but like, that was the other big gay shout out.
Yeah.
But there's also the scene where he answers her ad because he's looking for someone that doesn't turn him on in order to have a relationship where he's not gone crazy with sex. So he sees that adorable photo of her in a beret.
Yeah.
And
I'm pretty sure the beret keeps getting bigger over the course of the movie.
Written in giant marker on the back. And then he speaks to Mimi Rogers on the phone. And this is where the movie gets the theme that it does not address, which is where she's like, "You've seen her photo, right?" And it's like, she's not a burn victim. Like, why is everyone talking about her? Like, she's such a disaster.
But this also sets up Mimi Rogers nicely as sort of like the frenemy.
Yeah, but it also tells me that this is a movie about the one guy who is a sex addict modelizer who needs a therapist, and this woman who comes from this very abusive background who has taught her to hate herself despite the fact that they really shouldn't have. And there is one scene, which we'll get to later, where they kind of address this, but not enough for me. Anyway, that really pissed me off.
And at the same time, Rose is, as I said, like, Rose is oddly confident and secure and okay with how she looks. Yeah. So it's
right.
Well, she seems fine.
Yes.
Her students laugh far too hard at her jokes, even though she is charming and funny. They are so, like, the overworking extras who really want Barbara to hire her for their next film, because they're so into
Or
her.
That's how she directed the scene.
Maybe. Guys, I'm funny. Action! And I think when he's looking at the photos, I'm not sure, but there's this really lovely Sex and the City shot where it's like the building, and then it goes interior of his window, and Jeff Bridges is behind his computer.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of like overdone stylization in this movie that it doesn't really need. Yeah. Like when she comes home from the marriage proposal and it's like a musical number's about to start, because like
there were several times when she was like walking down a hallway with fervor towards the end of the movie, and I totally was waiting for unironically Don't Rain on My Parade.
Absolutely. Now the one thing that does make sense that she's an old maid is that whole weird perfect bite cute thing that she does, you know, with the way she eats, where she always has to have the perfect bite. She assembles things.
She does like
fork.
A composition.
Yeah, I know.
Like
that's great.
It's totally great. It's the only thing that I was like, oh, that's why you're not.
Which
married.
Is really funny,
no,
too, because she gets a salad, which is
like, first of all, like that's how great. I eat my salad.
First of all, they're in like the most like fancy restaurant. There's like ballroom dancing, and all she gets is like an iceberg lettuce salad with like one cherry tomato. I was like, what an awful restaurant.
Okay,
but then she's like cutting her like salad, and she's doing the composition bite, and then she's like, I need extra dressing.
Then I should clarify that it's trying so hard to be a thing that makes her quirky.
Yeah, well, that's the problem, is that I think Barbara Streisand doesn't understand humans.
But she approximates them very well.
She does. Yeah.
People who
build
shopping malls in their houses usually don't.
So it does seem like there are these sort of arbitrary, vaguely stereotypical, but not even that stereotypical, but arbitrary traits that she has. Like, she loves baseball. That is not significant to the plot. She's just always watching baseball.
And it's supposed to make her mannish and unattractive.
Which is absurd.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the hiding the junk food in around the bedroom.
And dressing like a Hasidic woman in mourning.
I guess that too, but again, as Michael pointed out, that's actually very fashionable these days.
Yes,
I love the dinner then with Lauren Bacall when she's like, "You wanted to take me to an Alzheimer's benefit." I said, "Forget it." That's one of my favorite movies.
And she still and she still has remarkable comic timing. Every single one of her jokes, Barbara Streisand. Every single one of her jokes.
Because I love the way she actually laughs when her mom says that without pointing out the pun, and I love that she has a Barbara Streisand is pure charisma. I should point out, I'm not a huge fan of hers as a singer. I find her music a bit too adult contemporary for my taste. I've always loved her as an actress. I've always thought she's totally on fire when she's an actor, and I'll see any movie she's in. I went and saw The Guilt Trip.
I saw The Guilt Trip with my mother.
Because that was my mom, and so I loved it. Anyway. And she doesn't disappoint me as an actor in this movie in terms of her charisma. She's very charming.
But I couldn't. I wasn't really sure how to take Barbara, though. I wasn't sure if I really enjoyed her, because sometimes she was super over the top. Other times she's just very natural. Other times she's super charming. And then other times she looked like a wiggly Muppet. Like, I wasn't sure what I was looking at.
That's the package. And she plays every scene as if her nails are still drying.
Oh my God, totally. And I love that she's such a like naturalist, like grubby, I live with my mother woman, but she's a long, beautiful, little manicure.
Yeah,
and I don't think she's ever taken off her actual rings ever. Like, she had bling the whole time.
And in that dinner
scene... We
all
know the story of why she has the long nails, right?
No.
Tell us. Tell us,
Uncle Bill.
Her
father wanted her to be a secretary, and that was her way of making sure that
rebelling
would happen.
Ooh.
Was to keep her fingernails long. Also, her stepfather told her she was too ugly to have ice cream when she was a kid, which is also why she's had this lifelong obsession
right.
with
That's
her
probably fingers. Why she made this movie.
Yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. Right. To get him back.
I think when she's having the first date with Jeff Bridges in the fancy restaurant, I think she's wearing her costume from the beginning of Funny Girl, which was set in, like, 19...
Okay.
When did Funny Girl start?
What is with her hair when she goes on it, like, before the taxi cab?
With the
it's like, no wonder you're not married if you let your mother do your hair for a date and it's suddenly 1979.
But I love yeah. like, she gets in the cab and it's like, well, slow down. It's not a convertible. Like, it's two windows. And then her weave is out. I was like, Beyonce.
She also yeah. loses the first cab to who I think is Christina Applegate on
okay.
Married with Children.
That girl is a hooker. Totally. I know that it's like, oh,
I thought it was,
sexy
I thought it was
girls
Kelly
get
Bundy.
The cabs ahead of me. And I'm like, that girl's not sexy. That girl's a hooker. The Sex and the City girls would stone that girl.
Oh, totally. Her boots were like taller than she was. Like,
yeah.
Oh, they were gross.
And then Jeff Bridges wears a bow tie on their date because he's a professor.
You know,
so
they're, cliche. You know what? They're
so cliche.
Leaving aside the creepy... sex thing.
Yeah.
They have, like, it's such a perfect, adorable relationship, and they have great charisma together.
And they have good chemistry.
And they have good chemistry,
and it makes no sense that he's not into her.
No, yeah. completely. Which
it
is,
also makes...
which becomes the plot point later.
Right.
Which is that
but it also makes
her.
No sense that, like, it's all about her getting him to accept her despite the fact that she's not pretty. She's never, he's never forced to be good enough for her, despite the fact that he has a psychological problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
but
he's also a bore. Like,
he's
totally
boring.
Boring.
Exactly.
But that's also the same as Grease. Like, to bring up another great romantic comedy.
I also love that, I love that we know that she's a nerd because she can't operate a remote control. Like, that scene is so annoying.
And it's so 90s because she has, like, 35 remote controls.
Yeah.
I love it. But Allison, to go back to your point, what's great about the chemistry for them is that it's so solid that even when it flips around at the almost sex scene and he turns her down, mm-hmm. it was actually really heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
And it worked.
It does.
Yeah.
It does actually work.
Except she looks so hot in that negligee. Like, she's such a nice figure. Why? I know that sounds so old-dated. Like, you have such a nice figure. She has such a hot body. And she always has, and she still does.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't he be into that?
Well, he got into it.
Because she has brown hair.
Yeah,
like, get over it.
Probably. That's...
So... Can we move on to the second date that he takes her to when he's like...
But before we do...
Oh, okay.
I'd like to address how they talk about prime numbers on their first date.
Okay, please go ahead, because I know you did research.
I think you have a lot to say.
Well,
on
my
this.
Father's a mathematician, and so he talks about twin prime conjecture, which made me very happy.
Right.
And so I called my dad to see where they're at the twin prime conjecture now. I guess, where are we? Almost 17 years later?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And that's still a conjecture. They haven't proven it yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
But what's funny is in 1996, he's talking about twin prime conjecture. Like, oh, maybe, like, you know, numbers in the millions might also be primes. We don't know. That's absurd. The numbers that they've proven to be twin primes have...
That is good to know.
Thousands and thousands of digits.
Well, if he faced the students every once in a while, he would probably have figured that out.
That's right.
I love when she comes home from her date, her first date, and Lauren Bacall says, did he kiss you? And she goes, no. And she's like, oh, that's kind of sweet. It's like, why? I was like, in my mind, I'm like, Lauren Bacall always fucks on the first date or something.
She does.
I get why she was so like, oh, how old-fashioned. He didn't kiss you on the first date.
It's all part of the psychological damage of the Gordon. Women.
Betty Bacall puts out. Right. Mm-hmm. Let's just get the word out there.
thanks, Bill.
But to go back to their date. Sorry, I didn't mean to blow up about prime numbers. That was boring.
No, it wasn't boring.
The thing that I really think, Allison. I also understand prime numbers. But what's really cute is how, like, he's so genuinely impressed that she understands what prime numbers are.
Well, because he's been having sex with supermodels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who don't.
The girl who thought A Farewell to Arms was a diet book or whatever.
That was George Segal's girlfriend.
Right, but they're the same.
Yeah.
Except George Segal is much more likable than him, and for some reason he's not crazy. And you notice George Segal loves Barbara throughout the whole movie. Like, he's always so charmed by her.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't be?
Wow. Yeah. Why didn't they get together?
Yeah, exactly.
Is he the one that replaced Dudley Moore?
Yeah.
Okay, well, she probably made him, like her in the movie.
And then I love the scene she's showing him how to be a good professor, and she's telling him, like, tell a story! It's like, he's a math teacher. Like, he's a... You can't tell a story with... calculus, but whatever.
Didn't it's you understand of... Lady Chatterley's lover better after Barbara talked about her ugly dress and her beautiful sister?
I just mean it's wasted advice because his students already know what he's talking about. It's just a matter of him actually facing them and not being so dry, but whatever. Yeah. And then I love that she's not sexy because she's wearing that very long sweater. Like,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's really weird. The whole costuming in this is very inconsistent.
She's dressed like a Hasidic woman in mourning.
Yeah.
I guess so. But it's like it goes back and forth.
And then she has a makeover and is dressed in like Donna Karen 1980.
And she's wearing, and when she's still fat, ugly Barbara, she's wearing this beret, which I think gets bigger and floppier with every scene.
I think that's called her hair.
Well, maybe.
And then that student comes in while she's consulting with him, and he actually like has... A seizure. It's like, why would she be into this guy who becomes such a moron just because a girl under 25 enters the room? Like, what is attractive about him? That would be a deal breaker for me. I'd be like, see you later.
That's when he comes home from his three month trip.
No, when she's teaching him how to be a good prof, and then his student comes in, who's obviously like trying to get with him.
But we're skipping over the second date when he's like, hey, you know, I have this wonderful band that I love so much. Please, please come hear me. And you think maybe it's a string quartet, maybe it's a jazz group. I don't know. And it's the most aggressive new age Christmas music.
Yeah.
They play like I Hear the Bells?
I think so. But the best part of that scene is his like weird little toy that he has, and he's so excited about it.
That's right.
The early smartphone. Yeah.
Well, I don't even know what it is.
It measures music, and all it is like four little dots that go up and down. He's like, look at that.
It's just an excuse for Barbara to do that amazingly like sarcastic face throughout the whole scene.
And
like,
it's also brilliant. Yeah, and then she also has like her four horny male student stalkers catcalling her from the balcony.
Yeah, I know. Like, who you're on the date. And then she does, shame on you, finger thing.
The nice thing about him not having a sexual interest in her is that he allows her to be herself all the time. Mm-hmm. And it just only makes her more charming, and it only makes it more ridiculous to us that he's not into her.
That's the thing. It's actually what they're portraying is just a normal relationship.
Yeah. And we're supposed to be sympathetic with him because he is stuck in like a 19-year-old's fantasy stupidity.
But then when he takes her out, like, and they're outside by the fountain or something after the aggressive Christmas concert, and he's like, this is what I want out of life, he then compares himself to Alex Forrest in Fatal Attraction.
Right, yes.
I just wanted to scream, like, just run. You know what?
I really love that scene, though, because it really, like, she's sitting down, she's very demure, she's doing that sarcastic, like, you're so interested in what's going on kind of thing. But the camera angle's there because she's short, he's much taller, she's sitting down, but he's like going back and forth to the left and right, but the camera's like right behind her, and you get a real sense of how he's just hovering over her going bananas, and she's like, what the fuck did
again, Barbara Streisand is a good director who understands film and who understands setup and all that stuff.
And then we have my favorite scene, which is Mimi Rogers complaining about her husband. And then we have Lauren Bacall when he comes over for dinner. She's like, I just threw this on. It's just so funny. And then we realize that Lauren Bacall doesn't seem to like I know that she's wary of their setup because she knows what the situation is and she thinks it's weird and she's right to think it's weird. Yeah. But I get the impression she also doesn't like the fact that Jeff Bridges likes her daughter for who she is. Mm-hmm. And she's like, are you sure you like her despite the fact that she's not pretty? Like, she doesn't say that, but I mean, that seems to... And again, it's just like, you come from this very abusive home.
Yeah.
And we need to address, to separate you from your family.
If we remove actually just watching it and we just listen to Blythe Danner, Lauren Bacall.
Oh my god.
Yeah, sorry. We hear...
We should just listen to Blythe Danner.
If you just listen to Lauren Bacall, she sounds... Her delivery sounds exactly like an old Disney villain.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
Like that witch in Sleeping Beauty. What's her name?
Maleficent.
Oh god, she's so creepy.
I love her. I raised two daughters. I buried a husband.
Yeah. I've made my coffee. Yeah. When Barbara Streisand asked her to make coffee.
You know that she just spent her whole life waiting to say that line on a daily basis.
Oh, I had a freak out moment.
Only because that's my mom. But
I had a freak out moment at that whole dinner scene where Jeff Bridges comes over for dinner, meets mom for the first time. She actually said something that my mom always said at dinner parties when I was a little kid. She's like, Rose loves to fold napkins. Because I used to do that all the time. It was my job to do the table setting, and I'd like come up with all these napkin folds. Like, how my mom didn't know I was gay when I was six, I have no idea.
And then did he just go up and listen to the Andy Gibb album and cry? Sure.
So at some point he proposes marriage because he decides that this is the best thing.
Not before the adorable scene where she gives him the prime number cufflinks.
Yeah. Oh,
which
yes.
is adorable. Yeah. It's an adorable little touch.
That is his birthday dinner. Right. That's right.
Yeah. And then...
that is adorable. That's super adorable. I like those cufflinks a lot.
And then she tells her mother she's getting married, and it's like the meanest scene where her mother's like, why does he want... And again, I understand why her mother is weirded out by this
setup. Sure.
But at the same time, it's... they have this very unhappy like fight, and it's addressing the fact that her mother is so verbally abusive, but she doesn't address it in the right way, which is like, I proved you wrong, a man wants to marry me, and it's like, that's not what the heart of the issue is.
No, it's awful.
And then her mother's like, oh, by the way, he found you in an ad. She's like, I already knew that, sorry. And it's just like they're trying to hurt each other more.
Yeah, but it's also weird that he found you in an ad. Like, that's the 1996 version of you met him online.
Yeah. And it was a lot more looked down on back then.
Even though everybody meets everybody online.
But the reason why she says it is because she wants to be like, just so you know, he didn't see you across the room and think you were hot. This was set up by your sister, and you are in a relationship because we made this happen for you. And then she's like, I already knew that. I'm sorry you can't upset me with that. It's like, the female rivalry in this movie is quite rotten. Mm-hmm. Like, it's rotten to the core.
And that was at the point where I was like, you know what? Okay, I get it. Lauren Bacall, abusive relationship, abusive past and everything. I wanted to see something different, and I know it comes... later on, but it still comes way later on.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's oversaturation.
Yeah, and Lauren Bacall disappears for like great chunks of this movie.
Yeah. And then we have the wedding again.
And then she
again.
Just emerges from a doorway.
much like a Disney villain.
She does.
And then we have another wedding. We have their wedding. And again, she has bad hair. And I don't get why. No, she has old lady hair when she decides to get
married.
But
it did remind me of Bette Midler's marriage to Spalding Gray towards the
Ages. Yes, me too! Yeah. Yes, totally.
The City Hall marriage.
And then not only are they going to have a non-sexual relationship, but it makes me uncomfortable that she always feels the need to remind him that it's okay, I don't want to have sex with you. Like, there's a lot of reassuring him that, don't worry, we're not going to make you have sex, which I find very, very weird. And then she looks so cute when they're getting ready for bed on their first night with her scrunchie and her track pants.
Yeah, and the room is completely divided. Like, the old lady room, and then it's like, sterile.
And they got, like, standard regulation prison beds.
Yeah. Like, and I don't understand why, because it's his apartment. Yeah. Why wouldn't they just, if they're moving into, because it's his apartment, right? Yeah. They're not moving into a new place.
No.
So why do they have I Love Lucy beds? Like, I don't really know.
With, like, these scratchy, like, you could see how scratchy they were, like, the scratchy prison blankets.
Yes. And and it's so funny when she's loosening them up.
Thank you.
And then they decide.
Me too.
I
always need my feet to stick out.
They decide to watch movies on their wedding night, which is VHS tapes because it's 1996, which really took me back. And they're all—I don't know if you noticed—they're all Columbia Pictures movies, and it's a Columbia Pictures movie. I don't know if you noticed that. I noticed that.
No. Why would we?
I don't know. And they watch Lawrence of Arabia,
the longest movie. Yes. Put that one in.
If there's any way to not have sex, watch Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah, but right at the end when she's like, "Oh," goes to put the videotape in, Jeff Bridges is like, "Yeah, stick it in."
And then she makes that face, like, no pun intended. I knew that at this point I was really getting fed up with the movie, because we have that cute scene where they're sitting around having coffee or whatever, and she's like, oh, you look good, you know, the jeans, the t-shirt, they look nice. I'm like, that's a polo shirt, that's not a t-shirt. And he's so Eddie Bauer, he's wearing a belt and mom jeans, like,
but then again, as Allison said, Barbara Streisand is adorable when she tries to approximate real life.
Yes,
because she sort of has an idea of what real people do, but not enough to make it
and that's
believable.
Where sometimes she's natural, and sometimes you're just like, so out of place there.
And then we see that her effect on him is proved well, because he's teaching his course, and he says, "Does a rising fastball really rise?" And like, I don't know, you'd have to ask my wife. And everyone dies of laughter.
Yeah,
in
and you
class.
See the girl who actually asked the question, her reaction. Yeah, like, she's her, like, both hands were over her face, laughing. It's like, easy woman, easy. Did you guys notice? I don't know which scene. It's near here because I wrote it near the scene we're just talking about. But Barbara Streisand is eating an orange and she eats the whole like rind and everything. She's like,
no,
yes, she ate the rind. I was like, ew.
That's ew.
That's weird.
They're watching, Brief Encounter is on TV at one point, and he's like, that's an example. That's what they set us up to. So, I'm like, Brief Encounter is all about guilt. It's the most unsexy, like, not happy romantic.
And it was probably
movie ever.
Filmed during, like, the Hollywood production code.
Is that when he's doing
No, it's a good... British movie.
Oh, yeah,
it's filmed,
you're
like,
right.
during the
you're
war.
Right.
Is that when he's doing his sit-ups?
Yes, and he's like, this is so unrealistic. I'm like, Brief Encounter is not unrealistic. It's a movie you don't want to be living out yourself.
And Jeff Bridges is sexy when he does the sit-ups and the...
This is the last time I think he's sexy. It's also
a very awkward shot to see, like, kneecaps and Barbara's fat head right in between.
He is so fully Asperger's in their attempted sex scene. He is so jerky and awkward. I was afraid she was going to get injured.
The sex scene?
Yes. Well, when she decides to tell him. And she wears that negligee, which is, I mean, she's wearing way too many, like, robe upon robe. But you can still tell that she has the most beautiful body.
She's got great cleavage going on.
Yeah,
totally.
And then when she goes into it, I don't know if this is good or not. Maybe it's on purpose. But, like, just the way she starts, she kisses him once and then she goes right for the nipples.
Okay. Which this was the point where I realized I was not prepared to deal with Barbara Streisand as a sexual being.
Yeah,
I'm not ready.
Neither is she. Because did you notice she's the worst movie kisser in the world? It's all closed mouth kissing with her and with Pierce Brosnan.
Awful.
Like, she doesn't want him to ruin her lipstick. Like, she's like, and it's like, you are so uncomfortable right now. Don't have sex if you can't have sex. I don't know, maybe because you come from an era, you started out in movies when people didn't have to do too much or whatever, but her movie kissing in this movie drives me friggin'
mental.
Probably
because her stepfather told her she wasn't too pretty.
Probably. Yeah. Except...
She's pretty enough to eat nice
the original
thing.
She might not be pretty, but I find her beautiful. Maybe because I'm a gay man, but whatever.
No, she's beautiful. She's Barbara Streisand. But, she learned to kiss. Gross.
And when she puts out the candle in that shot, she's photographed from the right, and I wondered if that was her way of being honest or something. I found that very strange, because it's the left side she's always insisting on being photographed
on, I can never tell.
Like, she made Rosie change her set.
I remember this when she finally... Yeah.
Yeah. So, I thought that was weird, that she turns... She actually lights the candle, she turns to the side, it's a full profile of her right shot as she blows up a candle like she's in a music video. Like, I was like, wow, is that her way of being like, this is how ugly I am, you're gonna see the right side of my face.
I'm a true artist now.
And then, but that whole scene goes crazy, because when she goes and cries in the bathroom, and she's caressing the door, and she's weeping against the door, and she's so indulgent.
And then covers the mirror like she's Eric Stoltz in Mask.
Yeah. She covers the mirror like she's about to sit Shiva.
Yeah, totally, that's what I thought too. Yeah. Also, he acts like he doesn't know how to have sex in that scene. Like, it's one thing that he's not into it, but it's like, what did you do with all this?
And then when she storms out of the apartment, she doesn't pack a bag of clothes. She just takes the picture of her parents with her.
Her hipster sweater and a photo.
and the picture of her real father and her fake Lauren Bacall mother.
When she is crying in the bathroom, there's a lot of fake bad ADR crying. And like, a lot of... Like, what are you doing? Like, if I was outside that door, I'd be like, what are you doing in there?
Do you think she got, like, somebody else to dub in the crying for her? Like, some famous Hollywood lady?
Because she doesn't know how
maybe,
to cry.
Yeah.
And also, no wonder he couldn't get it up. What's with the bad Kenny G music that you're playing for your
96? Throughout the whole movie.
Oh, it was 1996.
Every time she presses play on the tape deck or CD player, it's like, fucking
And then
sucks.
I get so angry when he basically tells
her... They bought the CD from the Christmas band. Yeah. That's what it is.
He tells her, he's like, I'm so disappointed in you. It's like, why are you punishing her for the fact that you have a sex addiction? Like, why? This makes me very, very angry. Mm-hmm. And you make her feel
better. Oh, no, it's a terrible abusive relationship.
And it was really weird, too, because, like, I disagree. I think Jeff Bridges actually did get into it, and I believed him. And then he decided, he's like, I can't do this.
And then he makes it her fault.
No, but the thing is, it's a technical thing. Instead of just, like, rolling off of her and getting up, he actually, like, climbs over her where his junk goes over her face. She's on her back. I'm like... Weird.
I wonder if there's a teabagging scene that never made it in.
And he's like, I've just never had this with anyone, a woman before, the way I can talk about everything and share everything with you. It's like, yeah, because you have a mental problem.
Yeah, like, that's just called a normal relationship.
It's called men. Let's face it.
And then we have, when she goes back to her mother, and then I guess it's the breakfast scene, which is really a good scene, where we finally get kind of near addressing what I have a problem with this movie, where she says, I never would have thought I wasn't pretty if you hadn't told me I wasn't pretty.
Is this where she was wearing what looks like to be an obese man's smoking jacket?
Yes, I think so.
Wait, when? The breakfast? It's either that or in the breakfast. Because in breakfast scene, her mom looks like a sad old man. She's sitting there chewing on a toothpick. Yeah. It was really weird.
It's a great scene. I think that's the scene that clinched Bacall the nomination as well.
When Barbara Streisand basically slut shames Lauren Bacall into saying that she's a pretty girl.
And she's healed by the photo. But she does say to her, she's like, I never would have thought I wasn't pretty.
This is when I wanted to play the Mirror Has Two Faces drinking game, where you take a shot every time somebody says the word pretty.
Ooh, next time.
Yeah.
And then she's healed by the photo. Sorry,
but it's such a bizarre scene as well, because Lauren Bacall McCall says your father adored you.
Yeah.
And in a way, he didn't adore your sister. So yeah, no, yeah. If it's like this either or
pretty,
proposition.
So she didn't need it. Is what I guess we're supposed to into it from that.
And adored had way too many connotations for me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And why didn't she use a photo of that? Wasn't an actual photo of Barbara when she was a kid, was it? Because I've seen photos of her.
It was a photo of like a small Aryan child.
Yeah,
with Barbara Hershey lips.
Why didn't you use a photo of you as a child? Because she was cute as a child. Because she's still cute. But anyway, so she's healed by the photo, and then we have the Rocky montage of her eating two carrots and going for a jog.
Eating carrots at the gym as well. Or eating
while reading and doing leg curls.
Yeah.
It's like the Miss Congeniality makeover scene is what it is.
And no, speaking of reading, I love that throughout the movie, she's never reading any specific books. She's an English prof, but the books she reads are English prose and the English philosophers are the two books that you see her reading.
It's like they couldn't get the rights to Chaucer.
Right.
So. Or else she just doesn't she doesn't know what books would a professor would actually read.
So if she's teaching about courtly love, she's an early English professor. Professor, which means they're all in public domain. So
show them.
But again, it's an interesting approximation of how real life is as opposed to actually putting real life on camera.
How long does he go to Europe for anyway?
3 months.
Because is it three
months?
It's
supposed to be 3 months, but then he comes home early. Which I have a note where I'm like,
has
you know
a
what?
Long, like that's a long sequence of a makeover. Like she has a full on Rocky makeover.
Full on, full on. But then when you think about it, it's like, spend, you know, 2 to 3 months with my husband in Europe or work out. I'm like, fuck that. I'll live with my insecurities and go to Europe.
Yeah.
But Jeff Bridges gave a very passive-aggressive invitation to go into Europe. He was like, oh, I'm going to Europe on a three-month book tour. You should come?
Well, he addresses it later kind of thing.
The song over the montage is the worst possible
it's
music
like
ever, even for its time. It made me miss Nickelback. Like, it's so...
It's a great... And it's weirdly out of sync with, like, the Marvin Hamler score.
Yes, totally.
You know?
It totally is. Very and then we have the reveal when he comes back, and she's wearing Donna Karan 1985 and has crimped hair.
She's wearing what she probably wore as the call girl in Nuts.
Yes. That's totally what I thought of. And I really thought she looked better before. And I remember thinking in 1996 when I saw it in the theater. I was like,
No, she looked way better before because you can just see that she's wearing piles of makeup and has hideous crimped hair.
And looks,
it's awful.
Mm-hmm. And
it's an awful
always has a choker for the rest of the movie.
Although I did want her to say, like, tell me about it, stud. Like,
oh my God.
Snuff out her cigarette.
Look, I have it in my notes, too. Yeah. It's been 9 years since Nuts and she hasn't aged, but her style hasn't either.
Exactly.
There we go.
And then I wanted Jeff Bridges and her to sing You're the One That I Want, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, let's not ever bring back chokers. Please.
Did you wear chokers in the 90s?
I think I wore a couple,
especially like velvet ones.
I had one velvet one, but then I also had a cousin who was a goth, and I.
But you were like 12,
a fan.
So it's different.
No.
So then, yeah.
And let's never bring back 1990s interior decor as well.
Oh, like, that whole movie looks like an Aaron Spelling show from the early 80s, like a lot of peach and earth tones.
Yes.
I do like the fact that she's all like, I'm hot and too bad if you don't like it by the time we get to this point.
Yeah.
And I know that, like, when I posted on Facebook that I was going to watch this movie the other day, a lot of people wrote and were like, oh my God, I love that movie. It's my favorite movie. And I think that's maybe one of the things that a lot of people, especially women, do connect to about this movie.
Yeah. And there's some interesting stuff after her makeover with, the scene with Pierce Brosnan is actually quite great, where she has this realization that it's him who's not good enough for her, and she does.
Yeah.
She articulates
that
really
too.
Nicely, and I think that is actually a very strong.
And
message.
Did you also notice when she says that line? It's not me. It's you're not good enough for me. It's like crescendo.
Yeah.
She flips her little wrap around.
It's amazing.
And,
that's when I was waiting for don't tell me to fly. That's when I thought it was going to come in.
Yeah.
And then we have the scene with her and her sister, where her sister tells her about the dark side of being beautiful.
Yeah. That was a bit bizarre.
Because she's like, now you're going to be looking for who's young. It's like, no, she's not. She's an English professor. Where is she going to be hanging out? She's going to be worried about other women.
But first, we're missing the scene where she goes back to lecturing and she's wearing like a cut down version of the judge's robe from the first scene. It's super low cut. So it's like as if she wanted to play Erin Brockovich, as if she was gunning to play Erin Brockovich.
But also, like, I understand why if your students have been used to you looking a certain way, they're going to notice when you look different. But I don't know any classroom where the hubbub of your students reacting to your makeover would be so strong.
Everybody got so fucking horny.
Like, university students don't give a shit about the professors. They just want to, like, get their lecture in and get their notes and study and get marks. Like, they don't care about what's going on in their professor's life ever.
And then in the scene with Mimi Rogers, she was sort of dressed as, like, the devil's sexy assistant.
Also, not only does she do the bad choker and crimped hair, she also wears granny hose. I don't know if you noticed this as well.
No, I didn't.
I didn't notice that, no.
But then and bad lipstick. A lot of bad lipstick.
Oh, the lipstick's terrible.
Yeah. Even for the 90s.
I think just her lips are terrible, but, in general.
No, I think her lips are lovely, but in her...
very distracting.
But I remember, that was one thing my sister said when she saw the movie back then, was, I thought she looked better before, and I hate all her makeup after she has the makeover. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, the makeup is terrible. Yeah. I mean, I know that's kind of mid-90s makeup for a middle-aged woman, but that's...
And
awful.
Then it's so funny with Chris Bones, like, so now you don't want me for who I... because I'm not who I was anymore. What do you want? Oh, yeah. She goes into Amy Rice.
Her timing is Cracker Jack.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's great. The scene where she and Brenda Vaccaro have lunch and she orders a salad and Brenda Vaccaro's like, I thought we'd always be
in the same boat.
It's a really weird scene, and then I'm really glad that there's no like appetite shaming, and then they just decide to share the burger and the salad.
On the other hand, it's so condescending of her to be like, okay, I will eat part of your disgusting fat person meal.
Oh yeah,
eat part of my healthy better than you.
But Brenda's line before that is like, oh, it'll go well with the ribs I had this morning.
Yeah.
And then Barbara sits down for like 5 minutes and stares at her. I'm like, oh my god, you're so mean.
Yeah. That scene is very uncomfortable for me, even though it's rooted in something that I do understand because, you know, like they're older and they're lonely and they don't feel good about themselves and all of a sudden her friend has... It's like, well, then why isn't she asking her, you know what? What did you do? Like, what was your workout? Yeah. Maybe I'll do it too or whatever.
I don't know.
Because that's usually what...
Yeah.
I'll eat ribs in the morning with my best friend over anything.
Yeah, so will I. But anytime I ever lose like 3 pounds, a million people are like, what are you doing? What are you eating? What's your... Like, people want to know. So it's just like, why wouldn't she ask her
I do want to ask, there was a moment in the reveal scene when she was having dinner with Jeff Bridges. She was like, look, I make some food. It has no oil. It has no butter. And she brings out a plate of raw vegetables. And then she smells
it. They're cooked.
Are they cooked?
Yeah, they're cooked. Those asparagus are cooked.
It looked like a Loblaws plate of like, like a $9.99 Loblaws plate.
It looks like what Bill brings out on every podcast.
Sorry, I didn't bring it.
But then she smells it, and I couldn't tell if she was smelling it to make fun of having a plate full of raw vegetables, or if Barbara Streisand legitimately thinks that raw vegetables have an aromatic smell.
That's her new perfume, like, smell.
Cauliflower by Barbara.
So, we should get to the end, because we have to wrap up.
We need to talk about the ending of this movie.
Well, I hate that it's so important that he calls her beautiful.
No, time's up.
I hate that that's so important that he calls her beautiful, even though I was kind of moved, because we all wanted to hear it.
Yeah, it's not that he has to call her beautiful, it's that he has to say, I love you. Mm-hmm. And that is a big thing. They're married.
But when he says, you're a sexy girl, he sounds like a sex offender.
Which is what every Columbia literature professor with tenure wants to hear is, you're a very sexy girl.
She expected to get a Best Director nomination for a movie that she ends with a guy singing opera out the window. That's all I have to say. You guys go ahead. Closing thoughts.
Then there's a really awkward, and I'm air quoting, a spontaneous montage with Jeff Bridges
dancing
in
the street.
So uncomfortable.
What is happening?
Like, just freeze frame credits.
In her big sweater.
The movie is at the end, directly, a Barbara Streisand film, and I went to press stop, and then it continued. And then so I watched for the next 5 minutes, like, what?
She's like, guys, we have this time on the set today.
They almost got run over like 35 times.
Well, it's a New York street.
But what's amazing about this dance sequence is that it goes between, I guess it's a part of it being a montage of a few takes, is that sometimes they're joking and laughing and joking around and sort of like play fighting almost. Then sometimes the dancing is so earnest.
And they have
with the eyes closed and the dipping.
Choreographed.
And it's it's crazy.
And how quiet is this New York street anyway, that he can scream up to her 70th floor apartment and she can hear him out the window.
It is 6 a.m.
Yeah.
I know, but unless you're on the Upper West Side, which really is very, very quiet.
It's like, say anything for people with graduate degrees.
But it was funny too, because when they started kissing, then you heard Puccini and they couldn't find where it was coming from. It's like, oh, it's fairy tale. Then we see the fatso eating in his window, and he's playing the record. I was like,
is he playing the record or is he singing?
I couldn't tell because it was a record, but I think he's singing along.
He might be.
But he has the instrumental version on the record.
But then when we see the like, I feel like they should have just left that out, because I was like, oh, it's not gonna work out. They're not hearing this. It's not actually happening from heaven. So
but I just have to say that Jeff Bridges just acted the hell out of this role.
Mm-hmm. I really liked him.
Yeah. Right through to the end.
I actually like all the supporting characters the most in this movie. I think that's the parts that work the best for me, which is why everyone walks away charmed by Lauren Bacall and Mimi Rogers and all that stuff.
And just confused by the sexual and gender politics.
Absolutely. Just so confused. I don't even know what to make of it. I'm actually surprised. I thought that we would like there would be more people like
there's so many mixed messages. It did make me call back to a movie by this wonderful director named Nicole. I can never say her name. Nicole Holofcener. There was a movie that she did maybe 2003 called Lovely and Amazing, which everybody should see. It's not my recommendation, but everybody should see because it's such an incisive look about body image and female empowerment.
Yeah, it's challenging the notion of where your self image comes from at home.
Yeah, and it's sort of like almost a good companion piece to this because it addresses so many of the questions that this movie doesn't
and
have
everyone's
the courage
so
to.
Good in it.
Yeah,
Catherine
exactly.
Keener and Emily Mortimer.
And it's written by someone who understands human beings.
Yeah, totally. I mean, all her movies are. And her new movie was at TIFF last week, and it was really well received.
Yeah, she's so good.
Yeah. And she also directed Sex in the City.
I wonder if this is why South Park makes fun of Barbara Streisand and makes her like a total, like, mutated robot that just destroys the town.
Well, then the fact that she doesn't have a sense of humor because apparently she's offended by that episode. Or
she doesn't have a sense of humor. Really? Yeah. She doesn't have a sense of humor, and yet she could land every funny line in the movie.
Yeah.
It's so strange.
Because she's only comfortable with the things that she herself is comfortable with. She can't take it from anybody else.
She's probably really hilarious.
And all the image stuff is really quite revealing about her own self-image.
Yeah.
In a way that's
uncomfortable and a way that's really necessary because I really want to meet her and be like, honey, we all think you're great. Relax.
Yeah, and guess what? Your makeover made you look like Barbara Walters looks like today.
All right. I've had a lovely time in this last hour, and thank you, Allison, very much for being here.
Thanks for having
me. I hope you'll do it again. Well, thank you, everyone, for our special 10th episode, and we look forward to tens more. As always, please find us on iTunes and subscribe to us, and if you do, please leave us a rating and a review, because we would really appreciate it. We are on Twitter at Bad Gay Movies, where you'll find all of our individual Twitter accounts, and Allison, you can be followed at Brovermania, I believe.
That's right.
Yes, so find her as well. Visit us at badgaymovies.com. You'll also find our RSS feed if you follow us on any other podcaster besides iTunes. We do take donations, and the link is on our website, or you can go to PayPal and just enter badgaymovies2013@gmail.com in the response or the to field. Or write to us at badgaymovies2013@gmail.com. We love all your feedback. Thank you very much for listening, and we will see you at episode 11.
We also give love advice. Bye!